love and respect. I'll never say her name out there, but she taught me everything that I didn't want to be in a teacher. She's about 28 years into her tenure, nationally board certified teacher. But at that point, she was ready to go, but was waiting to retire. And my day-to-day interactions as a young professional, super excited about impacting young people's lives, changing the world, just limitless potential. I was just cascaded by this energy of just like, tell the young people anything, they're stupid.
There's a huge force that's suddenly on fire. The forest is home to many animals, big and small. As the fire quickly spreads, the animals rush to safety. They all watch their homes burn in disbelief. There's a small hummingbird who too is in shock and couldn't believe what he was witnessing. In a moment as frightening as this, the hummingbird decided that he wanted to do something. Quickly flew to the nearest stream, grabbed some water with his beak, and flew back to the place he called home and began to spray the water. He continued to zip back to the stream, grabbing more water with his beak, and proceeded to again spray the forest. A few of the larger animals asked the hummingbird what he was up to, and the hummingbird shared that he decided to do something. The hummingbird's courageous act inspired all of the animals to also do something. All of the animals that call this forest home joined the hummingbird in his efforts and began to run and fly to the same stream, grabbing water and spreading it across the forest. Before they knew it, the place they called home was no longer on fire. This act was inspired by a little hummingbird. Hey y'all, I'm Donnell Cannon.
And I'm Jenny O'Mara.
Welcome to the Hummingbird Stories, where we talk to the most innovative educators around to learn what's possible in schools.
And you just heard from one of those folks on the intro, Dr. Sun Sam. Today he helps design school models as the National Director of Partnerships for Big Picture Learning. But once upon a time, he was a young teacher just entering the classroom.
Teachers and other adults at school have a huge impact on young people, and today's episode is all about reimagining their roles at school. Who is the teacher, right? And like, the teacher is not just a human that like shows up in the front of the classroom every day, but like the mentor. And we're not just talking about teachers, but parents and caregivers as part of that like learning journey.
Yeah, they all matter. And today we're going to hear from a few hummingbirds on the show. But first, let's kick it off with our friend, Dr. Sam, who told us a story that really illustrates the power that teachers have.
There was 3 file cabinets in the classroom. And every day, it's a curation of her tenure of lessons that she's created over these years. And every day, every morning I was there, she would walk over and pull out the lesson for the day. And that was it. I don't know when it was curated. I don't know what year, but that was it. And then also, she and I had a big scuffle at one point that the principal had to get involved, because my personal fundamental belief is just like, on my watch, I'm doing everything possible to make sure that my young people are successful. And so when they weren't performing, I stayed after school. I met them at lunchtime. I did everything I could to make sure. And so when it came to the end of the quarter gradings, like, all of my young people did relatively well with predominantly B's and A's. And what was said to me was just like, your grades are inaccurate. They don't measure the bell curve. So you got to redo this again. I said, what? The bell curve? And so this was, so I say all that to say, that was a very traumatic experience for me. That's not how I envisioned entering the field. So I wanted to go the complete opposite of traditional education.
So you guys have done a phenomenal job at Big Picture Learning, right? Like creating the context, right? The school context, the teaching context, to look at every young person and start there, right? Mm-hmm. You created mm-hmm. the structures that serve as the conduit for like mm-hmm. the big learning to happen in this particular context. So like in North Carolina, we're hard grappling with like like what is the role of a teacher, right? Mm-hmm. One thing that definitely come out of like the West End report is to provide like qualified and prepared, well prepared teachers. But you guys have totally reimagined the role of a teacher at Big Picture Learning. So I want to double click on your model a little bit. So while I was at the mat, and Jenny and I've seen this across like, you know, all of the Big Picture Learning schools, we're able to witness like the power of your advisory model, which we totally adopted.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. Threw some rims on it and we went with it at Northwood
School of Innovation. Tried to adopt it and working hard still, I think.
For sure.
Working hard, sure. Right hard at it. But can you share more about the model and how you guys have continued to reimagine the teacher role?
Got you. So this advisory system, I'll say that quickly and I'll get to the work because that has implications for what the role is of an advisor. Mm-hmm. So our advisory system is very, very intentional, and meaning that a small group of young people are put together in a small community led by this one advisor for the duration of their high school experience. So I'll just speak to the high school experience. So for 4 years, you have this one advocate, this one educator that gets to know you fully as a human being, that now becomes your advocate, that becomes your ally, that becomes your counselor, that becomes your social worker, that becomes your person that failing is not an option. Like, and you can't escape me because there's only 15, 17 of y'all that I see on a daily basis. You know what I mean? So this system was done very intentionally to make sure that every young person, you know, no one's gonna fall through the cracks because we'll make it very, very, very hard for that to happen. And so with that being said, like to me, fundamentally, and I've had this happen in my conversations in different spaces, but I'll start there. I'll start about relationships. You know, sometimes, you know, I have, and this is real, so I'm just going to say stuff that's provocative. You know, there's some educators who feel very, very strongly that that's fundamental to what we do. And, you know, when we enter the space of education, I build relationships with young people. Cool. But we have other educators that feel I teach content. You know, I've had educators say to my face, like, I'm a biology teacher. You guys are way too warm and fuzzy for me, man. I don't do that. And I just said, and I interviewed this person. I said, thank you very much. I appreciate for your time. We moving on. Because to me, none of this matters if you don't have a relationship with young people. None of it. And I think that's probably one of the first job expectations in general of being an advisor is just that you develop deep, meaningful, authentic relationships with young people that go beyond like, hey, you didn't turn in this assignment this day. What's going on? That's part of it. I don't want to not acknowledge that. That's part of it, right? But that's not the only thing that you're having conversations about. Like, hey, how's your mom doing? You know, I heard she's not doing too well, blah, blah. Hey, can I send her some flowers? What's going on? Like, you know, that's the level of like relationships that we try to cultivate. And that, and I just want to say, like in the high school space, and I've said this before, it isn't just for 4 years in a traditional compliant school system structure, right? It's not 4 years, it's for life. That's something that's different too in our advisory system is we try to get people like, you know, I've been to, you know, graduations, I've been to marriages, I've been to babies being birthed. I've been to like, because it's not 4 years, like it's for life. And those are the type of relationships that you're trying to connect. So that's part of the work. That's part of the, like the expectation. And so the other piece is an advisory. So what happens in an advisory? And in our design, there's three sort of things that happen that are important to us. So first and foremost are the non-cognitive skills that are super, super important. You know, young people knowing how to communicate, work in a team, you know, consistency, organization, all those things are super, super important. So there's a space and time for that. Advisory is a time anyways for them to work on their industry skills. And typically this is the project that they're engaged in at their internship site. So Donnell met a couple of young people that articulated to him, hey, this is my internship. This is what I'm rocking out on. This is what I'm doing. Here's where I'm at with it. Here's where I fumbled. Here's where I'm really excelling. This is my project for the quarter. Give me some feedback. Like that is advisory. Like the
quick shout out to Teo, man. Teo, yeah. He's my guy for life. Yep. Teo emailed me after the visit and was like, yo, so great to meet you. I'm excited to be an educator one day. Would love to connect. He did it on his own, right?
But yeah.
Teo, if you ever get this in your ears and your AirPods, man, look, big love for you.
Well, the it's interesting because when you have a design, so first of all, not taking anything away from Teo because the young brother is amazing, man, amazing. And when we had dinner, we were talking about this. I was blown away by this young person. But from the beginning, when you develop a system that is student-centered and you give spaces for young people to really dive deeply into what they're interested in and understand what like professional standards are and create a culture of critique and feedback, like, and you have a strong school culture around acknowledging the whole young person. We have a whole bunch of Teos is what I want to say. And some in different places of their sort of growth, you know what I'm saying? Because I'm gonna be real, young people are young people. So some can evolve to that space of advocacy a lot quicker than other young people. But other young people move at their own pace, and but still the pathway and the opportunities there. And I think, again, that goes back to your question, Jenny, as far as that's one of your responsibilities as an advisor, is just to acknowledge that individual pathway for that young person. You're going to have the tales of the world, but then you're going to have a kid like me that didn't do well in a traditional setting. But how are you going to help him see his genius? How are you going to help him see his brilliance? How are you going to use an asset-based approach to help him develop his skills so that he can continue to move in his journey in his life, you know?
That was Dr. Sun Sam, the National Director of Partnerships at Big Picture Learning.
Sun talked about teachers who sometimes say, like, my job is to teach content. And I gotta say, I cannot understand that. And like, not trying to like throw shade at anybody, but I know I wouldn't have been half the math teacher I was without the deep relationships that I formed with my students. So when he said, it's not 4 years, it's for life, I was really inspired by that. And I'm mad I hadn't heard that as a teacher, as a principal, because I would have used that all the time. I know that kids would not have learned nearly as much mathematics as I learned in my classroom without the relationships. And I can't imagine being an educator without relationships, because that's why we do this work, right? It's like, we love children so freaking much that we got to do this really difficult work every day. And so what I love about what Big Picture's done is they've taken this really important component that I think often happens because we trust that teachers love children. It doesn't always happen, right? But we want it to happen, but there's not many like structures or things put in place to make it happen. And what Big Picture has done is put a container in place every day for relationships to get built, to get strengthened, and for young people to have mentors who are guiding them along the way towards their futures.
Yeah, right? And like, that's where customization starts. It's like every single young person in the school like has to be like deeply known, right? Like, I know you beyond the human that just shows up at school.
Yeah, and that's why we did the whole advisor. Remember, we used to say like every kid will have at least one adult who knows them well and deeply and loves them and who they love and trust too.
And feel deeply connected to, right? Yes. And because that's the space where the design, we're designing learning around, yep. Right? Like, yep. We could say like now this like, the context of what you learn in this building is shaped around like that lived experience. It's shaped around like the things that motivate you, shaped around like who you are like right now and like who you are in the future, you know? And like good learning, deeper learning like starts there.
That's right.
Not like, hey, it's time to learn about circumference, like, you know?
Yeah. Although I do love learning about circumference. I just want to drop that there real fast. Shout out to Pi. Donnell mentioned that Dr. Sun Sam works for Big Picture Learning, a nonprofit dedicated to fundamentally redesigning education. One way they do that is through a global network of over 275 schools, fellows, and other places of learning around the world.
Yeah, one of those is Nashville Big Picture High School. And we actually heard from Janaya in episode 2 of this season. She's a student at Nashville Big Picture, and let's listen to the short clip that we have of her.
Big Picture is very, very focused on engaging families. Just recently, we had student government, which is myself and my friend, we're the presidents of it. we hosted like a movie night situation where you could bring like your family and your distant cousins and just come and watch a movie. So your parents can see, this is what I'm doing. These are my friends. This is my teacher. We're just really engaged in knowing and having the families know what's going on. And it's really nice to be able to like bring my mom and have all my teachers be like, oh, hey, Miss Yolanda. Like they're very comfortable and have like that family bond. And also my advisory is like my family. I have about 10 people in my advisory now. And we sort of do everything together. We go to the movies and go out to eat. And you can just, you know, you can just talk to somebody in your advisory if you need to. And that's essentially your family. So I think that's a big thing.
My favorite part of what Janiyah just said was that her mom can walk down the hallway and the teachers are like, oh, hey, what's up, Miss Yolanda?
What's up, Miss Yolanda?
That makes me so happy. And that like, you can just, I can just imagine what the culture of that school must be like for the parents to know Janiyah that well, that they know her mother that well. And yeah. I have to say the most memorable relationships that I've had as an educator and the things that have been most important to me are those parents that I've gotten close to like that and their children, obviously. But there's something really uniquely special about developing that deep relationship with parents. Absolutely. Like there are still some parents I text happy birthday every year to.
Yeah, yeah. And that's what it really means to be deeply connected to a young person in a school, right? Like to also pull in close to people that like love them like outside of the school, right? But engage them beyond like the what we've seen is like tokenism, right? Like to really like use as Son has said this to us before, and it's he mentioned on a podcast, but to see the student as the curriculum, right? And then the community as a school, right? If we're going to design from that place, then we, and you and I use this term often, it's like one of those things, one terms of transcend, it's like you design with and not for, but getting really clear about what it means to design with, right? And pulling parents like really close to really craft an experience alongside of the young person that feels good for that young person.
Looking back, I deeply value working with parents. I don't think I did a great job of it as a principal because I felt so busy all the time and it felt like another thing that had to happen. Mm-hmm. And in hindsight, I wish I had leveraged those Title I nights to engage parents more meaningfully. I wish I had leveraged like needing like this policy requiring a parent on the school improvement team. I wish I had saw that as just like a huge asset. Because if I'm being honest, it was really hard to get a parent to be on our school improvement team and to find a parent who had the time, the means, and the access to get to our school and join us on those meetings. And I think there were ways around it and we didn't take the time or didn't have the time in some ways to get creative enough to figure out how are we going to actually involve parents. I think we did a lot of ideation around it and I'm really proud of the ideation. The actualization of parent involvement, it was really, really tough. I remember I had a roommate, Melissa, who's in Edgecombe still. Shout out to Melissa. She had worked in DC public schools. And one thing that her school did was like, make a huge commitment to home visits. And she like showed me their structures and I was like fired up about it. I was like, this year, every kid at Phillips Middle School, their home will be visited. We didn't do it, but we visited a whole lot of homes.
Yeah.
And it's like stuff like shifts like that. Like I think the policies that are in place are really important. And I think we got to somehow help school leaders and teachers make the time or find the time or prioritize getting more creative about parent engagement.
Yeah, I love that. I the one time I feel like we did that really, really well was during the micro school. When we had just like cycles of like feedback with parents, like we're often going back to the table and asking like, did this work well? Is this what you meant when you said this thing?
That's true.
How does this feel for you, this experience feel for you as a parent? I felt like we were doing that, so those cycles really well. But prior to that, to your point, like I felt like it was only like, you know, just surface for me in that way, right? Like, but I often to your point once more, often told the story about why it was so complex and challenging to engage with parents in ways that we had did in a micro school. You know, so like the micro school was like the eureka. It's like, whoa.
So interesting.
Like this is how like we pull parents closer, right?
You know what else was different about the micro school?
Yeah.
Is we built deep trust with parents because their kids were radically experiencing school differently.
Yeah.
And sometimes parent engagement meant letting a parent criticize your leadership or criticize your teaching methods.
And
that is scary to do. And it requires a level of vulnerability that I think takes time to grow and develop. And I think at the micro school, though, we built the trust such that, and like, it was like, no, we need you to give us this feedback. And we're not going to take it personally because we're trying to figure out what is the design of school that we need to be mm-hmm. right now to help our kids achieve what they want to achieve. Mm-hmm. And speaking of the micro school, we heard from Kwanasia earlier in the season. Shout out to Kwanasia. She just started her freshman year at A&T. Aggie Pride. We're so proud of her. It's been so wonderful to see her Facebook pictures.
And I'm just sending love to all of our young people who are walking onto college campuses across our country for the first time. I know it's scary and you have what it takes to go the distance. When you hear Kwanasia say Miss O'Meara, that's our girl Jenny.
And you might hear her also say Mr. Cannon. That's our boy Donnell.
I feel like what gives me hope and confidence is how everybody, like the expectations everybody has set for me. Like since I've been in high school, even in middle school with Miss O'Mara, like everybody has always looked at me as a leader. Nobody has ever doubted me, saying like I could. I always tell somebody my dreams, and nobody has ever told me like that I couldn't do it or I need to start. Like nothing negative was ever said, and like opportunities like this always give me hope that if I can do it now, then I can always do it in the future. And if people are looking at me like as someone big now, and I'm like in high school, then I know that if I keep up like what I'm doing now, and like, and I stay focused and determined and passionate about what I really want to do, that I can do it in the future.
Oh, for sure.
It's more so my environment, like outside of my family, but like you, Miss O'Mara, like the teachers here, even Miss Brown, and she's only been my principal for a year, like it's like they know. And then like the other day, I have a college course, which is a nurse aide. And like this lady, like my professor, I never takes my mask down. But like my first day of class, I guess she could just tell by my eyes, I guess. But she was just like, she could tell that I was determined. And like out of all people, she just stopped and looked at me and just told me that she could tell I was determined. And we had a meeting with her the other day, and she just told me that my smile was amazing. And I never take my mask down, but I guess she could tell that I'd be smiling. She was like, every time I look at you and I like see you smile, I just know that I'm doing something right. So I know that if I can make her day better just by smiling under my mask, that my energy, like people can feel my energy.
Girl, you have all the ingredients to set this world on a different path. Mm-hmm. So anything you want, like go after it with much vigor. You know that. The possibilities for you are just like endless. So we're really proud. So a question I have is when do you feel the most excited to like learn, excited to be at school, and excited to like really motivated to like to learn new things?
I feel like I feel the most excited when I like know what's ahead. Like the day before was great, then I know that tomorrow is going to be magnificent. And the teachers here always have this let's get up and do it type attitude. So I never just come in class and they're like, you're just going to do work and I'll see you tomorrow. As of right now, I have Mr. Nelson and Ms. Lewis and, of course, Ms. Collins and everybody else checking in. So I know that, like, my teachers always, they never have a negative day. They're always wondering about what we're doing, how we're doing, like, what we're feeling, if we're having a bad day, like, where we are in life. So I just get this, I piggyback my vibe for the day or the next day, piggyback off of my teachers. And if not, I know that me and my friends are some way, somehow gonna always make today a good day.
I love hearing the voices of young people, but nothing hits my soul quite like hearing the voices of young people that we've gotten to work with in the past. That's just so cool. And what was really neat about that is Kwanasia had been a micro school student her ninth grade year. Now she's talking to you as a 12th grader, right? And you can hear how she's got deep relationships with all of her current teachers or the teachers she had last year for her 12th grade year. And I just want to pause and just say, like, North Edgecombe, you were doing the thing and we're so proud of you, because clearly she feels held at school and safe at school. And that means that she can thrive now. Schools are doing, and I really like this practice. Didn't you all do this once where a school takes every single child's name, prints it out, or gets every single child's picture, prints it out, right? Puts it up in their PLC room or some classroom, right? And then teachers go, and then there's some practice of putting a sticker on every kid you feel close to or a sticker on every kid you feel connected to. And you can do different colors and the prompts can be a little different. Mm-hmm. And then it kind of gives you this heat map of which kids have relationships with teachers and which ones might we need to tend to a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Have you guys ever done that?
Yep.
And I think that that's a really powerful way to get towards what Kwan Asia was just talking about. Mm-hmm. I have to also say this though, and just like have to be vulnerable and honest. One thing she was saying was like, I know I can do this. My teachers are speaking confidence into me every day. And I know for sure that even when she was at Phillips and probably sometimes at North, that there might be some students who weren't getting that every single day. And so the work is always, like, there's always work to do to deepen relationships with every single young person. And I think it's important having practices like that one that you all did so that we're constantly checking in and saying, is this kid experiencing school such that they're being told they can do it every day?
Yeah.
Because if they're ever at all getting any type of message, even if it's not, and usually it's not anyone explicitly saying you can't do this, but there's other ways that we're messaging you can't do this. And I think we've got to find practices to help us identify those. And I wish I had been more intentional with that. And if I am ever in a school building again, you better believe I will be.
And systematizing that, right? So again, so it's not just happening by chance, but figuring out what young person in this building does not have that critical connection and how might we ensure that that young person has the critical connection that they need. There are hummingbirds all across the country doing amazing work. We're going to hear from Miguel Gonzalez, the leader of Embark Education in a sec. It's a radically different school model embedded in two small businesses, a bike repair shop and a coffee shop.
Yeah, it is so cool. And Embark itself is a learner-centered environment, which, as we know, means thinking differently about how we train, support, and prepare educators. So Miguel created a program to do just that.
We got to hear about this educator residency program that you founded. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, absolutely. So the residency program is called the Iterative Space. And it really came about as I was designing Embark and building it out, was really this recognition that I, you know, we really were hoping to find educators who could step into this, step into Embark and other learner-centered environments. And, you know, recognizing that that can be a real challenge and that often, like, one of the first barriers is the fact that adults, educators themselves, have never experienced learner-centered learning or opportunities. Mm. And so, you know, the other thing that I knew and know is that educators are brilliant, right? Facts. That they have this inherent brilliance that is like bursting at the seams. Like, I think initially, and then even more so as their career goes on, right? We spend hours in learning. We spend hours in professional learning. And oftentimes, you know, you can end a great professional learning opportunity or session or class, and all of a sudden you go back, you're like, oh, can't do anything with that. Yeah. Right? Like, you know, you just go back to the normal, right? And so I started to wonder, well, what happens if you give educators the time, the space, and the resources to allow that inherent brilliance to come through? And then on top of that, I started to think about, like, well, what happens if you just radically trust that it'll occur? Mm-hmm. Right? And I started to unpack the concept of, like, radical trust and what that means. And, you know, one of the things that I continually kept going to was, like, I love conferences. I love going to educational conferences, and I really don't love the sessions, right? I love the moments in between the sessions,
yeah.
Right? And I hear that all the time. And so, like, well, what happens if we design for that? What happens if we design for the opportunity for people just to connect? You know, the whole point of our, like, the residency in and of itself is actually not, it's not about content or craft. It's about the experience itself. Right. So everybody's coming in with their, like, it's like, what are you passionate about? Like, you have this inherent brilliance inside of you as an educator already. And we're just never given the time, space, resources to, like, let that surface. So, like, that's what we're doing. And actually, we're fortunate enough to, like, we don't have defined outcomes. Right. There's not this space in which it's like, hey, you have to get to here by the end of July. Right? It's like wherever you get is going to be the right place for you to take back to your community. And if that makes the difference, like, in August when you're starting, like, awesome. If it's 3 to 5 years out and, like, when this is really bubbling and coming to fruition, then, like, that's where change actually happens, right? Change doesn't happen at the end of a course syllabus, right? And so what we did is with the iterative space, you know, building off the design principles of providing time, space, and resources and enabling radical trust, the only thing we require is that they share in a meal together and they break bread daily, right? So we have these brilliant educators. And again, we define educators in a pretty broad term, mm-hmm. right? If you see yourself as an educator, then you are, right? What this has done is it's brought people to the residency from college professors, traditional classroom teachers, school leaders, nonprofit founders, and parents, right? And all of them enter this space together as educators. And then anything that they're dreaming of, right, that they're hoping to bring to fruition for their community, right, is what they enter this space with. And, you know, one of the questions that we ask of them is where they're at in the liberatory design process with their idea, right? You could be at the beginning, right? And where are you at in the process with the idea that you're hoping to move things forward, right? But we don't have a defined outcome. We don't expect that each of them finish their project by the end of the 6 weeks. They might, and if they do, that's amazing. But if they don't, wherever they get is the right point for them. Because if it changes, you know, it changes their community, impacts their community in a year or 3 years, like, again, that's where change is really going to happen for those communities, because the timing is right for them, and the timing is right for their community. One of the things I've also said is, like, change doesn't happen at the end of a course syllabus. So, you know, as we're designing professional adult learning opportunities, like, change isn't going to happen at the end of a course syllabus. And so, you know, what happens when, again, you just radically trust that they care and that they're going to invest in this for their community, and they will bring it to fruition, and they have been, right? So anything that they have planned, you know, in the morning, pretty much shifts course in the afternoon, because all of a sudden they're, you know, they've been working on something and digging into it. Then all of a sudden you bring these brilliant minds together around a meal, and all of a sudden everything takes a left, right? Where, like, the afternoon, now all of a sudden you're seeing these people, like, you know, sinking into a single person's idea. It may not even have been theirs, right? And you're seeing, like, partnerships and relationships form in truly authentic ways as they, you know, become invested in each other, each other's communities, and their learners that they don't even know yet. And it's been, yeah, it's been pretty impressive to, you know, to be able to see amazing ideas come to fruition out of the iterative space.
Yeah, it's an incredible way to think about, like andragogy and the ways that the, like, big learning happens for the adults in the building.
That was Miguel Gonzalez, Director of School at Embark Education. Make sure to come back next week to hear Miguel give more details on Embark's radically different school model. But wow, Jay, how about that iterative space?
Dude, that stuff is phenomenal. My favorite part of it is the level of coherence here. Adults are learning the same way that he wants kids to learn at his school. And I just think that is so profound, and we need more of that in educator training and support.
Yeah, and I just nerd out over all that they are up to in the world. Miguel and his squad actually connected us with two of their students, Quinn and Luke, and they got some advice for some of you adults out there that are working in schools.
What advice would you all have for teachers or principals who want to give their students more freedom and choice, like what you have?
I would say it's really all about trust. I think that trust is the key thing here. We're allowed to, I think they trust us to go on walks, right? During the day, if we're like, I got a lot of work on my hand, I might take a break and go for a walk around two blocks or something, right? With my friends, right? So I think that's all about trust, having that trust that students will do their schedules and have, right? And there's like not really punishments if there are. Well, like, so if we do, let's say we are like not scheduling well, right? We'll have a talk with our advisor, right? And they'll be like, hey, you have to start scheduling. Your work's going to start getting backed up, and your grades are going to go down. And usually if you're in a learning experience, it'll probably affect your learning experience, right? And usually at the end, that learning experience matters, like in the Rube Goldberg project, how we had to do that big community thing. If we were messing around and our Rube Goldberg machine wouldn't work, it wouldn't be there, right? If our drink project, we were messing around, wouldn't be there, right? So
nothing.
So we learned that our actions, they make impacts on our work.
Mm, that's really cool. How is that different? Did you all go to traditional schools before you went to Embark where there was like punishments and consequences that the adults put on kids?
Yeah.
How is this different from like traditional discipline in schools?
I think that it's not even like, I'm not angry, I'm just disappointed, right? It's not that. It's helping you become your best self. It's not like you're getting punished for not doing your work. It's saying you can do better. You got this. Like, we have the conferences, right? I think that's kind of what the purpose is, to kind of help you stay on track, right? Like, remind you, remember, try your very best and it'll end up going your way.
That's really inspiring. And that comes back to that trust piece you were talking about earlier, right?
Yeah.
Can one of you tell me about an adult in your school who you feel really close to?
I feel really close to Jeremy. He's my advisor, right? So that kind of makes Jeremy, yeah. So Jeremy's helped me a lot, right? He's, I have my student-led conferences with me, right? And one time in our student-led conference, which is kind of where we're telling our parents about our work, Jeremy is like, well, he's doing good math, but he could be doing better. And then my dad was like, no, you guys started doing better math. And I was like, okay. And then that was also around the time where I started asking for help, right?
Mm.
So when I was doing math and I was getting up and I was going to just stop, I asked for help, right? Now I'm understanding a lot more math.
That's awesome. So Jeremy not only helped you with math, but helped you learn how to ask for help when you need it.
Yeah.
That's super cool. What about you, Luke? Any adults that you feel really close to you can tell me about?
My advisor, Carissa, I feel really close to her because she's helped me a lot with all sorts of things. Like at the beginning of this year, all the years merged together. But at the beginning of this year, I was struggling again. And then I had an advisory conference and she was like, you got to do this. And that set me on the right course to do better. So just having a person to like, here's what you need to do better. And then having like, it's helpful.
Yeah. I'd say, the adults the adults are on your side no matter what.
My goodness, I just loved talking to Quinn and Luke. Again, they're both students at Embark, and y'all, they've got some good advice for all of us educators.
Yeah, I keep telling y'all, everybody should be out here listening to young people. They know what's going on. We have one last hummingbird for you today. Dr. Tyler Thigpen, he's the co-founder of the Forest School. He'll be back next week, along with our good friend Miguel, to share more details about his radical school model. But here's a moment from our conversation with Tyler that absolutely blew our minds.
You call teachers guides, right?
You do.
Okay, we're on the same page, D. Like, so I mean, given what young people are thinking and doing in school, what's the role of the guide and how do they get prepared to facilitate these learning experiences with young people?
We're very excited about the role of guide versus teacher. And it is very different. I referenced earlier, teachers, traditionally speaking, need to have sort of deep content expertise in order to guide learners through, the various nuances of each discipline. We take a different approach. And, there is so much amazing deep disciplinary content that's available online. We really view our guides as being on the hook for being experts at learning design and knowing what deep learning looks and feels like. And so they see themselves almost as game makers, where they're
setting the parameters of a game that include, you know, incentives, whether they're extrinsic or intrinsic motivators, whether they're individual or group motivators. Our guides are designing environments that are created to inspire learners to, on their own, take up learning and to do it for intrinsic reasons as well as extrinsic reasons. And then once they take up this learning experience, then our guides are, through formative and summative assessments, many of which are offered through online platforms, but not always, they're making sure that that deep learning, that deep disciplinary learning and collaboration is actually happening, you know, over the course of that experience. So they're experts in learning design. The other thing is they're great coaches. They're great mentors. They are Socratic in the sense that they're not answering questions, but they always respond back with a question. They're encouraging learners to learn in ways that we as adults do. You know, if you think as an adult, like, how do we learn? Well, typically there's one of three ways typically that we would learn. One is, you know, we'll do research. I mean, I don't know about y'all, but I use YouTube. I'll pull up YouTube, 10 videos, and usually three will have to do with the thing. One of them usually teaches me the thing, or Google, but sometimes books or articles, but if sometimes I can't get the answer through research, and if that doesn't work, then I'm probably going to tap my network and ask, you know, some of my peers or an expert, or maybe I would hire, if I, you know, have that opportunity, hire someone to teach me the thing, but another person. But if that doesn't work, then we always have the scientific method. I mean, we can tinker, you know, trial and error. And we believe that young people can learn in similar self-directed ways, that they can research if they're guided, you know, and supported and motivated in appropriate ways. They can do peer-to-peer learning. You know, they can learn from others. They can learn to self-advocate and ask the question that they need help from someone else. And so our guides, even though there is direct instruction that's happening in our school, it's not coming from our guides, but our guides are making sure that our learners have access to, you know, people from whom they can learn. We really believe that anytime a guide would answer a question, the learners lose an opportunity to actually shoulder the responsibility of learning that thing on their own. And we want them to build and develop those self-advocacy and agency skills. And then also that guides are guiding them through the scientific method to do trial and error, to learn from failure, to learn from mistakes. Guides are creating a culture and an environment where it's okay to take risks. It's okay for them to fail. We take a growth mindset. I think the other final key role for a guide is that of a relationship connector. So I talked earlier about social capital, and, you know, when you go to a typical graduate school of education, and I teach at one, you know, this isn't one of the things that teachers are trained to do, which is to reflect on their own networks and then leverage their own networks in service of helping young people. But this is what's needed. This is what's needed in 2022 because of where young people are at in our country. And so we really view the role of a guide is to think about their own personal and professional networks and how they might leverage those to aid and support our learners. And if their networks then are insufficient, you know, to help, then to crowdsource from our parents, from our staff, from other staff members, from other learners' friends and parents, so that our learners can have opportunities for apprenticeships, for example, or opportunities to get feedback from real world experts, or opportunities to connect with users that can be, you know, served over the course of our quests. And so that's for us a key role of guides as well, that they're helping build the social capital of our learners by lending their own.
That just sounds like the dream to me. Like, you know, having been a teacher, like, that's the role we all want to play. And then yet time and structures sometimes stop us from doing it as thoroughly as we want. That's incredible.
That was Dr. Tyler Thigpen, co-founder of the Forest School in South Metro Atlanta.
And that's all we have for you today on the Hummingbird Stories. Thank you to our guests, Miguel Gonzalez, Dr. Sun Sam, and Dr. Tyler Thigpen.
And of course, our girl Quanasia. Thank you, Quinn and Luke. And don't forget to come back next week to hear more about the Forest School and Embark Education. You can also check the show notes for more info on their work.
And don't forget, this season's all about starting a larger conversation and sparking real action across communities. So every episode we'll be posing a question and inviting you to submit 2-minute clips of your answers.
So here's our weekly question for all of you hummingbirds listening. If you could redesign the role of an educator, could be a teacher, a TA, a principal, and so on, what would their role look like?
We want to hear your reply. Visit sayhi.chat/hummingbird. That's sayhi.chat/hummingbird. Your thoughts could appear in a future episode.
Thanks to Robert Kinlaw for producing the podcast. Thanks to Rupin Fafaria at edNC.org. And a special thanks to Mebin Rash, who saw two educators as podcasters.